Chapter 14. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Otto Zitti poked his head out the side door of the Bolin house and ascertained that no one was watching. He could leave safely, Sylvia Bolin realized as she saw what he was doing.
"What have I done?" she asked herself as she stood in the middle of the bedroom, clumsily buttoning her blouse.
"How can I expect to keep it secret? Even if Mrs. Steiner doesn't see him, he'll surely tell that June Hennessy, and she'll blab it to everybody along the William Butler Yeats. She loves gossip. I know Jack will find out, and Leo might have come home early." But it was too late now, over and done with. Otto was gathering up his suitcases, preparing to depart. "I wish I was dead," she said to herself. "Goodbye, Sylvia," Otto said hurriedly as he started toward the front door. "I will call you." She did not answer. She concentrated on putting on her shoes. "Aren't you going to say goodbye?" he asked, pausing at the bedroom door. Shooting a glance at him, she said, "No, and get out of here. Don't ever come back. I hate you, I really do." He shrugged. "Why?" "Because," she said with perfect logic, "you're a horrible person. I never had anything to do with a person like you before. I must be out of my mind. It must be the loneliness." He seemed genuinely hurt. Flushed red, he hung around at the doorway of the bedroom. "It was as much your idea as mine," he mumbled finally, glaring at her. "Go away," she said, turning her back to him. At last the front door opened and shut. He had gone. "Never, never again," Sylvia said to herself. She went to the medicine cabinet in the bathroom and got down her bottle of phenobarbital. Hastily pouring herself a glass of water, she took 150 milligrams, gulping them down and gasping. "I shouldn't have been so mean to him," she realized in a flash of conscience. "It wasn't fair. It wasn't really his fault. It was mine. If I'm no good, why blame him? If it hadn't been him, it would have been someone else sooner or later." She thought, "Will he ever come back? Or have I driven him off forever?" Already she felt lonely, unhappy, and completely at a loss once more, as if she were doomed to drift in a hopeless vacuum forever and ever. "He was actually very nice," she decided. "Gentle and considerate. I could have done a lot worse." Going into the kitchen, she seated herself at the table, picked up the telephone, and dialed June Hennessy's number. Presently, June's voice sounded in her ear. "Hello?" Sylvia said, "Guess what?"
"Tell me."
"Wait till I light a cigarette." Sylvia Bolin lit a cigarette, got an ashtray, moved her chair so that she was comfortable, and then, with an infinitude of detail, plus a little essential invention at critical points, she told her. To her surprise, she found the telling to be as enjoyable as the experience itself. Perhaps even a bit more so. Flying back across the desert to his base in the FDR Mountains, Otto Zitti ruminated on his assignation with Mrs. Bolin and congratulated himself. He was in a good mood, despite Sylvia's not unnatural fit of remorse and accusation just as he was leaving. "You have to expect that," he advised himself. It had happened before. True, it always upset him, but that was one of the odd little tricks typical of a woman's mind. There always came a point when they had to sidestep reality and start casting blame in all directions, toward anyone and anything handy. He did not much care. Nothing could rob him of the memory of the happy time which the two of them had engaged in. So now what? Back to the field to have lunch, rest up, shave, shower, and change his clothes? There would still be time enough to start out once more on an authentic selling trip with nothing else in mind this time but pure business itself. Already he could see the ragged peaks of the mountains ahead. He would soon be there. It seemed to him that he saw a plume of ugly gray smoke drifting up from the mountains directly ahead. Frightened, he stepped up the velocity of the copter. No doubt of it, the smoke rose at or near his field. "They found me," he said to himself with a sob. "The UN, they wiped me out and they're waiting for me." But he went on anyhow. He had to know for sure. Below lay the remains of his field, a smoking rubble-strewn ruin. He circled aimlessly, crying openly, tears spilling down his cheeks. There was no sign of the UN, however, no military vehicles or soldiers. Could an incoming rocket have exploded? Quickly, Otto landed the copter. On foot, he ran across the hot ground toward the debris that had been his storage shed. As he reached the signal tower of the field, he saw pinned to it a square of cardboard. Arnie Kott doesn't like what you stand for. Again and again he read it, trying to understand it. Arnie Kott? He was just getting ready to call on him. Arnie had been Norb's best customer. What did this mean? Had he already provided poor service to Arnie? Or how else had he made Arnie mad? It didn't make sense. What had he done to Arnie Kott to deserve this? Why? Otto asked. What did I do to you? Why have you destroyed me? Presently, he made his way over to the shed, hoping beyond hope that some of the stocks could be salvaged, hoping to find something among the remains. There were no remains. The stock had been taken. He saw no single can, glass jar, package, or bag. The litter of the building itself, yes, but only that. Then they, those who had dropped the bomb, had come in first and pilfered the stock. You bombed me, Arnie Kott, and you stole my goods, Otto said as he wandered in a circle, clenching and unclenching his fists and darting glances of rage and frenzy up at the sky. And still he did not understand why. There had to be a reason, he said to himself. And I will find it out. I will not rest, God damn you, Arnie Kott, until I know. And when I find out, I will get you. I will pay you back for what you did. He blew his nose, snuffled, dragged himself back to his copter with slow steps, seated himself inside, and stared ahead for a long, long time. At last he opened one of the suitcases. From it he took the .22-caliber pistol. He sat holding it on his lap, thinking about Arnie Kott. To Arnie Kott, Heliogabalus said, "Mister, excuse me for disturbing you, but if you are ready I will explain to you what you must do." Delighted, Arnie stopped at his desk. "Fire away." With a sad and haughty expression on his face, Helio said, "You must take Manfred out into the desert and cross, on foot, to the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Mountains. There your pilgrimage must end when you bring the boy to Dirty Knobby, the rock which is sacred to the Bleakmen. Your answer lies there when you have introduced the boy to Dirty Knobby." Wagging his finger at the tame Bleakman, Arnie said slyly, "And you told me it was a fraud." He had felt all the time that there was something to the Bleakman religion. Helio had tried to deceive him. "At the sanctuary of the rock you must commune. The spirit which animates Dirty Knobby will receive your collective psyches, and perhaps, if it is merciful, it will grant what you request." Helio added, "It is in actuality the capacity within the boy which you must depend on. The rock alone is powerless. However, it is as follows. Time is weakest at that spot where Dirty Knobby lies. Upon that fact, the Bleakman has prevailed for centuries." "I see," Arnie said. "A sort of puncture in time. And you guys get at the future through it. Well, it's the past I'm interested in now, and frankly, this all sounds fishy to me. But I'll try it. You've told me so many different yarns about that rock." Helio said, "What I said before is true. Alone, Dirty Knobby could have done nothing for you." He did not cringe. He met Arnie's gaze. "You think Manfred will cooperate?"
"I have told him of the rock, and he is excited at the idea of seeing it. I said that in that place one might escape backward into the past. That idea enthralls him. However—"
Helio paused.
"You must repay the boy for his effort. You can offer him something of priceless value. Mister, you can banish the specter of Amweb from his life forever. Promise him that you will send him back to Earth. Then no matter what becomes of him, he will never see the interior of that abominable building. If you do that for him, he will turn all his mental powers in your behalf."
"It sounds fine to me," Arnie said.
"And you will not fail the boy?"
"Oh, heck no," Arnie promised. "I'll make all the arrangements with the UN right away. It's complicated, but I got lawyers who can handle stuff like that without even half trying."
"Good," Helio said, nodding. "It would be foul to let the boy down. If you could for a moment experience his terrible anxiety about his future life in that place."
"Yeah, it sounds awful," Arnie agreed.
"What a shame it would be," Helio said, eyeing him, "if you yourself did ever have to endure that."
"Where is Manfred right now?"
"He is walking about the streets of Lewistown," Helio said, "taking in the sights."
"Cripes, is it safe?"
"I think so," Helio said. "He is much excited by the people and stores and activity. It is all new to him."
You sure have helped that kid, Arnie said. The door chimes sounded, and Helio went to answer. When Arnie looked up, there stood Jack Bolin and Doreen Anderton, both of them with fixed, high-strung expressions.
Oh, hi, Arnie said, preoccupied. Come on in. I was about to call you, Jack. Listen, I got a job for you.
Jack Bolin said, Why did you buy my contract from Mr. Yee?
Because I need you, Arnie said. I'll tell you why right now. I'm going on a pilgrimage with Manfred, and I want somebody to circle around overhead so we don't get lost and die of thirst. We gotta walk across the desert to the FDR Mountains. Isn't that right, Helio?
Yes, mister, Helio said.
I want to get started right away, Arnie explained. I figure it's about a 5-day hike. We'll take a portable communications rig with us so we can notify you when we need something like food or water. At night, you can land the copter and pitch a tent for us to sleep in. Make sure you get medical supplies on board in case either Manfred or I get bit by a desert animal. I hear there's Martian snakes and rats running around wild out there.
He examined his watch.
It's 3 now. I'd like to get started by 4 and get in maybe 5 hours tonight.
What's the purpose of this pilgrimage? Doreen asked presently.
I got business out there to attend to, Arnie said. Out among those desert bleakmen. Private business. Are you coming along in the copter? If so, you better put on something different, maybe boots and heavy pants, because it's always possible you fellas might get forced down. That's a long time, 5 days, to keep circling. Make sure in particular about the water.
Doreen and Jack looked at each other.
I'm serious, Arnie said, so let's not stop to mess around, okay?
As far as I can tell, Jack said to Doreen, I have no choice. I have to do what he tells me.
That's the truth, buddy, Arnie agreed. So start rounding up the equipment we'll need. Portable stove to cook on, portable light, portable bathroom, food and soap and towels, a gun of some sort. You know what we'll need. You've been living on the edge of the desert.
Jack nodded slowly.
What is this business? Doreen said. And why do you have to walk? If you have to go there, why can't you fly as you usually do?
I just have to walk, Arnie said with irritation. That's the way it is. It wasn't my idea.
To Helio, he said, I can fly back, can't I?
Yes, mister, Helio said. You may return any way you prefer.
It's a good thing I'm in top-notch physical shape, Arnie said, or this would be out of the question. I hope Manfred can make it.
He is quite strong, mister, Helio said.
You're taking the boy, Jack murmured.
That's right, Arnie said. Any objections?
Jack Bolin did not answer, but he looked more grim than ever. Suddenly he burst out,
You can't make the boy walk for 5 days across the desert. It'll kill him.
Why can't you go in some surface vehicle? Doreen asked. One of those little tractor jitneys that the UN post office people use to deliver the mail. It would still take a long time. It would still be a pilgrimage.
What about that? Arnie said to Helio.
After some reflection, the bleakman said,
I suppose that little cart of which you speak would do.
Fine, Arnie said, deciding then and there. I'll phone a couple of guys I know and pick up one of those P.O. jitneys. That's a good idea you gave me, Doreen. I appreciate it. Of course, you two still have to be there overhead to make sure we don't break down.
Both Jack and Doreen nodded.
Maybe when I get there where I'm going, Arnie said, you'll maybe find out what I'm up to.
In fact, you darn well are going to, he said to himself. There's no doubt about that.
This is all very strange, Doreen said. She stood close to Jack Bolin, holding onto his arm.
Don't blame me, Arnie said. Blame Helio.
He grinned.
That is true, Helio said. It was my idea.
But their expressions remained.
Talk to your dad yet today? Arnie asked Jack.
Yes, briefly on the phone.
His claim filed now, all recorded, no hitches?
Jack said, He says it was properly processed. He's preparing to return to Earth.
Efficient operation, Arnie said. I admire that. Shows up here on Mars, stakes out his claim, goes to the abstract office and records it, then flies back. Not bad.
What are you up to, Arnie? Jack said in a quiet voice.
Arnie shrugged. I got this holy pilgrimage to make along with Manfred, that's all.
He was, however, still grinning. He could not help it. He could not stop, and he did not bother to try. Use of the UN Post Office chitney cut the proposed pilgrimage from Lewistown to Dirty Nobby from 5 days to a mere 8 hours, or so Arnie calculated. Nothing to do now but go, he said to himself as he paced about his living room. Outside the building, at the curb, Helio sat in the parked jitney with Manfred. Through the window, Arnie could see them far below. He got his gun from his desk drawer, strapped it on inside his coat, locked up the desk, and hurried out into the hall. A moment later, he emerged on the sidewalk and made for the jitney. "Here we go," he said to Manfred. Helio stepped from the jitney, and Arnie seated himself behind the tiller. He revved up the tiny turbine engine. It made a noise like a bumblebee in a bottle. "Sounds good," he said heartily. "So long, Helio. If this goes off okay, there's a reward for you. Remember that."
"I expect no reward," Helio said. "I am only doing my duty by you, mister. I would do it for anyone."
Releasing the parking brake, Arnie pulled out into the downtown Lewistown late afternoon traffic. They were on their way. Overhead, Jack Bolin and Doreen were no doubt cruising in the copter. Arnie did not bother to search for sign of them, taking it for granted that they were there. He waved goodbye to Helio, and then a huge tractor bus filled in all the space behind the jitney. Helio was cut off from view. "How about this, Manfred?" Arnie said as he guided the jitney toward the perimeter of Lewistown and the desert beyond. "Isn't this something? It makes almost 50 miles an hour, and that isn't hay." The boy did not respond, but his body trembled with excitement. "This is the nuts," Arnie declared in answer to his own query. They had almost left Lewistown when Arnie became aware of a car which had pulled up beside them and was proceeding at the same speed as theirs. He saw, within the car, two figures, a man and a woman. At first he thought it was Jack and Doreen, and then he discovered that the woman was his ex-wife, Ann Esterhazy, and the man was Dr. Milton Glaub. "What the hell do they want?" Arnie wondered. "Can't they see I'm busy? I can't be bothered, whatever it is." "Caught!" Dr. Glaub yelled. "Pull over to the curb so we can talk to you. This is vital!" "The hell!" Arnie said, increasing the speed of the jitney. He felt with his left hand for his gun. "I got nothing to say, and what are you two doing in cahoots?" He didn't like the look of it one bit. "Just like them to gang up," he said to himself. "I should have expected it." Snapping on the portable communications rig, he put in a call to his steward, Eddie Goggins, at Union Hall. "This is Arnie. My gyro compass point is 8.45702, right at the edge of town. Get over here quick. I got a party that has to be took care of. Make it fast. They're gaining on me." They had, in fact, never fallen behind. It was easy for them to match the speed of the little jitney and even to exceed it. "Will do, Arnie," Eddie Goggins said. "I'll send some of the boys on the double. Don't worry." Now the car edged ahead and drew toward the curb. Arnie reluctantly slowed the jitney to a stop. The car placed itself in a position to block escape, and then Glaub jumped from it and scuttled up crab-like to the jitney, waving his arms. "This ends your career of bullying and domineering," he shouted at Arnie. "Key Reist," Arnie thought, "at a time like this." "What do you want?" he said. "Make it snappy. I got business." "Leave Jack Bolin alone," Dr. Glaub panted. "I represent him, and he needs rest and quiet. You'll have to deal with me." From the car, Ann Esterhazy emerged. She approached the jitney and confronted Arnie. "As I understand the situation," she began.
"You understand nothing," Arnie said with venom. "Let me by, or I'll take care of both of you."
Overhead, a copter with the Water Workers Union marking on it appeared and began to descend. It was Jack and Doreen, Arnie guessed. And behind it came a second copter at tremendous speed. That, no doubt, was Eddie and the good members. Both copters prepared to land close by. Ann Esterhazy said, "Arnie, I know that something bad is going to happen to you if you don't stop what you're doing."
"To me?" he said, amused and incredulous.
"I feel it. Please, Arnie, whatever it is you're up to, think twice. There's so much good in the world. Must you have your revenge?"
"Go back to New Israel and tend your goddamn store."
He fast-idled the motor of the jitney.
"That boy," Ann said. "That's Manfred Steiner, isn't it? Let Milton take him back to Camp BG. It's better for everyone, better for him and for you."
One of the copters had landed. From it hopped three or four WWU men.
They came running up the street, and Dr. Glaub, seeing them, plucked dolefully at Anne's sleeve.
I see them. She remained unruffled. Please, Arnie, you and I have worked together so often on so many worthwhile things. For my sake, for Sam's sake. If you go ahead with this, I know you and I will never be together again in any way whatever. Can't you feel that? Is this so important as all that to lose so much?
Arnie said nothing. Puffing, Eddie Goggins appeared beside the jitney. The Union men fanned out toward Anne Esterhazy and Dr. Glaub. Now the other copter had landed, and from it stepped Jack Bolin.
Ask him, Arnie said. He's coming of his own free will. He's a grown man. He knows what he's doing. Ask him if he isn't voluntarily coming along on this pilgrimage.
As Glaub and Anne Esterhazy turned toward Jack, Arnie Cott backed up the jitney. He shifted into forward and shot around the side of the parked car. A scuffle broke out as Glaub tried to get back into the car. Two good members grabbed him and they wrestled. Arnie steered the jitney straight ahead, and the car and the people fell behind.
Here we go, he said to Manfred.
Ahead, the street became a vague level strip passing from the city out onto the desert, in the direction of the hills far beyond. The jitney bumped along at near top speed, and Arnie smiled. Beside him, the boy's face shone with excitement.
Nobody can stop me, Arnie said to himself.
The sounds of the squabble faded from his ears. He heard now only the buzz of the tiny turbine of the jitney. He settled back.
Dirty Nobby, get ready, he said to himself.
And then he thought of Jack Boland's magic charm, the water witch which Helio said the man had on him, and Arnie frowned. But the frown was momentary. He did not slow down. Beside him, Manfred crowed excitedly,
Gobble, gobble!
What's that mean, gobble, gobble? Arnie asked.
There was no answer as the two of them bounced along in the UN post office jitney toward the FDR Mountains directly ahead.
Maybe I'll find out what it means when we get there, Arnie said to himself. I'd like to know.
For some reason, the sounds which the boy made, the unintelligible words, made him nervous, more so than anything else. He wished suddenly that Helio was along.
Gobble, gobble,
Manfred cried as they sped along.